And Joe was, and then there's another guy, of course, Lonnie Fry. Do you have anything you want to say about Lonnie?
Except he wasn't as bad a shortstop as they said he was, but he turned out to be a great second baseman.
Absolutely.
Good
hitter.
And a real fine gentleman and a real student of the game. I'm surprised he didn't stay in it longer than he did.
He was certainly a big factor in those Cincinnati teams.
That's
at 39
right. Yes, he was.
Yep. And when I spoke to him, we were reviewing some of those great games between Paul Derringer and Whitlow Wyatt.
Oh, yes.
So those were some games. And Lonnie also was involved in a couple of that. He had a problem with Bartell, I remember, in Philadelphia.
That's right. Yeah.
And
that was before I got there. I guess that was 35.
And I tell you, another guy on that team I visited in Bodenton, Maryland, was Babe Phelps.
Yeah. Geez, he lost a lot of weight. I saw him maybe 5-6 years ago. I said, I'd never recognize him. Because he slimmed down and he was in great shape.
Well, he never liked to fly. And the Dodgers invited him out to an old-timers game. They might have invited you, too.
They've never invited me anywhere.
But they invited him out to an old-timers game, and I believe they used the Dodger plane to bring quite a few people out from the
yeah.
West Coast. So Phelps knew he wanted to go because he wanted to see some of the guys he played
right,
with.
Yeah.
But he didn't want to fly, but he finally decided he'd fly. So he gets on the plane, and he had a ball. They took him into the cabin. They knew he was queasy about it. So they took him into the pilot's compartment. He said, I'll never have a problem flying in an airplane again. He was telling me the story. He also told some great stories about Ricky when he was trying to get another $500 out of him. That was funny. I spoke to Freddie Frankhouse.
Freddie, Lord rest his soul.
And he died recently.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had a very close friend, thanks to my dad, Watson Clark, who was a fine left-handed pitcher.
I knew Waddy quite well.
He did quite well down in Florida there in his construction
business. Yeah, he got into the construction business.
My involvement there, my dad opened the pharmacy in the St. George Hotel when it was built.
Right.
And he used to fill the prescriptions for the guys. And
in those
days, you know, unless you went to a speakeasy, you couldn't drink, so they used to hang out at the soda fountain. Yep. Which was an elaborate deal, and Clark and Robbie, Randy Moore, I forget who else was involved. They got my father involved to invest $5,000. Not in the oil this time. No, this was in Clearwater real estate.
Oh.
And Dad went in there with about 12 other people. I don't know. I think my father invested about $5,000.
Right.
And never saw the property. He got a call about 5 years later telling them that a farmer wanted to use the land to let his livestock graze on. So he sold the stuff for about $1,500 more than he paid for it. But he always felt that he should never have done it because Clark made a lot of money in the real estate down there.
Yeah.
And
he got into the construction end of it, I think, later on.
Yeah, Clark and Logan was the name of the company.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of interesting things about Clark. He was a very...
Jack Russell was in with them there, too. He lived right there in Clearwater.
Yeah, Jack Russell. Right.
But
Clark never played high school baseball.
Mm.
And he went to a little college called Mississippi College in Clinton, Mississippi.
Right.
And his sister's boyfriend was playing on the team, and he convinced him to come out and try out the team. And he later went on to, Cleveland signed him, I think, originally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, but he pitched professionally so he could put two brothers through medical school. And his son today is a prominent archaeologist professor in New Haven, Connecticut.
Oh,
for a while he was at CUNY here in New York.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then he recently moved up to New Haven, Connecticut. And he told the boy, he said, look, he said, I'll pay for the initial college. He said, but you got to take your graduate degrees on your own. And the guy did. And he tells some great stories about his dad and Tony Cuccinello and Al Lopez. They were all quite close friends. And
right.
Then they did get involved in the oil.
Wait, with Casey.
Yeah,
I know it.
And, but Lopez and Casey
right.
put up additional money.
Right.
So Al, I know today, gets quite a bit of money out
Does
of
he?
That. That's the old...
Yeah, well, Randy Moore's father-in-law got them started and originally. I was there.
Yeah.
I didn't have the $1,000 to start with.
Yeah.
I was there my first, second year, so I didn't have the money.
But considering that Clark could pitch and win 20 games for the Dodgers of 1932, that was remarkable, that team.
That's right.
Of course, he had arm trouble. By the time you played with him, his arm was not...
No, he
still had a pretty good bender, but he...
Yeah, that's right.
But it was, as I said, I think with a better team, he would have been a fine pitcher, a better pitcher. And I can remember going to the World Series game in 1941 when the Dodgers were playing the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing Mungo and Dazzy Vance sitting in the Dodger box. And I said to myself, geez, those two guys must be saying, if I had this team behind me, you know.
Yeah, sure. Because
they were pitching for six and seven place ball clubs all the time. And it was really
something. I always said Waddy was smart. That's why he stuttered. He'd be figuring out what he was going to say before it all came out.
He really, you know, just like Freddie Fitzsimmons could beat Brooklyn anytime he pitched,
right.
Clark could beat the Giants anytime he
pitched. Right.
They're both kind of jinx clubs for one another. Well, let's see now. We get Brooklyn out of the way. I mentioned a few other names that come to mind. Ernie Coy.
Ernie, I got a letter from Ernie one day, and of course, I got a kick out of watching his son play here with the Giants.
Football, yeah.
I met him one time, and I gave him my card and told him to send it to his dad. Ernie came through here. He wrote me a letter, said he was coming. I said, why don't you call me about that?
What a magnificent body that guy has. Strong as an ox. Mm. And
great. Can run like a deer.
How about you played with DeRozier, didn't you?
Yep, 38.
38.
Mm-hmm.
Leo was just about coming to the end of his playing career at that time.
Yeah, he was.
Lavaghetto. Kyler.
Kyler.
And when you went to the Braves, obviously you're playing for Casey there. You had some interesting talent up there too. I always liked Gene Moore as a ball player.
Yeah, well, Gene was a very quiet type, and you never know he was around.
Great power to left center field.
Left center field, yeah.
Unbelievable power
mm-hmm.
for a little guy. And
he was pretty well built. He just didn't show it. Him stripped. He was,
and I know he was traded to the Yankees with you. Didn't he go to the Yankees with you?
No, I went all by myself.
I thought he went to the Yankees at the same time. How about Bama Rowell?
Bama, I understand, is still around somewhere down in Florida somewhere.
Yeah, Alabama was originally, obviously.
Right, yeah.
And you played with a guy who was something of a character, Eddie Miller.
Eddie was quite a shortstop.
He was really great. Yeah,
he had that glove right down on the ground.
Tremendous range.
Well, his theory was get down and get on the almost to eye level with that ball, so it don't take that bad hop. And he blocked. He'd get in front of the ball. That's what I say.
Great arm and
right.
And let's see some of these other fellas. Deb Garms.
Well, Deb and I, we both could punt pretty well, so we had the. The groundskeeper filled the third base line up just a little so the ball would stay in if he had got it down in the right spot down that line.
Max West.
Max, oh yes.
Good hitter.
Yep.
Of course you had Lopez. Wasn't Al Simmons with that team for a while?
Yep, yeah, he was with us for
short
a while.
Time.
Yep.
And you had Paul Wehner.
Paul was there.
Paul Wehner was a real
student. Oh, he was a character. He was not a formal educated fellow. You know what? He used to read the works of Seneca.
Yeah, he did.
Very
went to Ada Teachers College in Ada, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
He and Lloyd grew up in a farm town, Hara, Oklahoma, which is about 90 miles from Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
And it's a great story. You know, when they played in the 27 World Series against the Yankees, that was Lloyd's first year up. Paul
right.
ended up the year
mm-hmm.
before. After the series, they went back home. They were both living at that time in Oklahoma. They went back to Hara. And there was a band waiting for them at the station and a parade and everything. And they had lost the series in four games straight. So they found out, however, that all of their friends and relatives had placed bets that Lloyd and Paul together would have a higher batting average than Ruth and Gehrig. And they won a lot of money.
And that's something else.
And, you know, the two brothers really were quite a bit different. I mean, Lloyd was a little more... Paul didn't take very good care of himself, but...
I'll say. I knew. Because up there in Boston, we had one night there that I ended up... they were doing a lot of switching in bedrooms. I ended up in with Paul. And I had... Frank Demery was at the club up there, too. It was another character. he was my roomie, and I ended up... Bama Rao was rooming with Paul. And I ended up with Paul, and Bama Rao, I think, was somewhere else, and Demery had other company or whatever. And I think Paul went to bed with 6 bottles of beer and in ice, and as he got up to go to the bathroom, he'd have a bottle of beer, I guess. I don't know.
Well, he fell asleep in the subway once in New York, and he rode around the subway all night. Woke up in the morning, he was still on the subway train. And... they used to stay at the old Alamac Hotel.
That's right, the old.
And the guys that roomed with Paul said it was like rooming with a suitcase, you know, like
that's
the,
right.
The,
yeah, he was always out.
He was
very gregarious. Let me put it that way. He liked people and he liked to be out with them.
And he was a real good country boy, you know.
Jimmy managed the Cardinals 1 year.
Wilson.
Catcher, Jimmy Wilson.
Yeah.
He told me he's catching against Paul one day. Paul turned on and said, "Jimmy, where would you want me to hit this?" He said, "Left." He said, 4 times, left and right field, he said, he hit it right where I told him to hit it. 4 doubles. And he says, "You know, I'm pitching him just the opposite, so he can't do it," but he did it.
Well, he was a talent.
He told me he did 4 times, 4 doubles.
And he could stand up in batting practice. You know, he'd chop at the ball.
I said to him, I said, "Paul, what's the secret?" Yeah. He said, "You put the bat on the shoulder and you throw the bat off the shoulder." That's all. That's just the way he made it that simple.
It was easy for him.
Well, you know, to me, he had a thought of the plane of the bat being on the same trajectory as the ball.
Right.
And that was what I think he was getting at. And the only one I ever saw like that was the the third baseman with the Yankees who... they said had the funny batting stance.
McDougal.
Yeah. Funny names.
The Paul Wainer's wrists were remarkably strong. Their farm chores and everything. Lloyd always claimed that Paul would get him into fights when they were kids.
Yeah.
They used to play against Carl Hubbell's high school team.
They both came.
They were really great ball players and. A lot of stories, I'm sure, that are there.
Oh, jeez.
Now, when you got to the Yankees, I wanted to ask you, the atmosphere in the clubhouse, for example, at Brooklyn and Boston, was it about the same, or, there must have been some kind of spirit there, obviously.
Oh, yeah. You were always trying. Yeah. Nobody wanted to lose. You go out there and you battle, and then say, "Geez, well, we'll try it again tomorrow."
It was uphill all the time.
Right.
How about the Yankees?
Well, over there, they'd say, "Well, don't worry, we're going to win." That was the other. And they felt that, and they were not pop-offs. Nobody in that clubhouse ever said, "Hey, we're the best." They just went out and did it. But they did talk baseball in the clubhouse. They'd want to know if somebody knew was around or who knew him and what did he throw and
you had a lot of talent on that Yankee club.
I'll say.
You had Dickey,
right?
Keller, DiMaggio, Henry, mm-hmm. your friend Corsetti,
right?
Phil Rizzuto was a shortstop.
Red Ralph.
Ralph was a great, great third baseman.
He was a great ball player.
I think most one of the know. Most under. Valued right. ball players.
And so was Corsetti undervalued.
Oh, yeah, Frank was a fantastic. He was a real student of the game.
Not only that, but he was a great player.
Yeah.
He was a great student.
He used to wear that Yankee jersey or gloves, very loose, so he could get hit.
I was just telling stories about that. In fact, I wrote it down to write back to him and say, "I remember you could get on base, whether it be base on balls or get hit, and to get hit often. And a hidden ball trick was another one of his cute ones."
Well, it's nice to know that he's interested in this pension thing that we're going to talk about in a few minutes. because he's done so well financially anyway. It's something that obviously he feels is a cause he wants to do something about, even if he doesn't need the money at this point.
But you had Gomez and you had Ruffing and Gomez. We're in Detroit one day, and they're leading 2-1. And we're in the bottom of the ninth inning, and the ball, Frankie's playing shortstop. And the ball's hit to him, and you can't see it, but I reached about maybe 6 inches from my face for the ball, and the ball was thrown maybe 12 inches from my face. And I, for some reason, I just reached to there, and the ball went past me, went up against the railing in Detroit, and tie-in run goes to second base. Well, geez, if there was a hole in the ground, I'd have crawled in on it. Oh, geez, I felt up. No reason. And Joe Gordon said, he said, don't worry about it. We get them out. And sure enough, we got them out without them scoring. Now I get in the clubhouse. And Gomez come over, and he picked up my glove, and he looked at it. He said, you know, he said, you weren't waived out of the National League. He says, your glove was, and you had to go with it. And with that, he threw it out the clubhouse window.
Oh,
luckily, I had another glove. But this is the type of thing you would run into. Getting back, the first hit I got as a Yankee, Ed Levy opened the season in 42.
Yeah.
And finally, I got a chance to play. And the first hit I got was a home run, which I didn't hit that much. So now I go around the bases. Head for the dugout. Nobody's in. They're all crowded around somebody on the bench. And I come out. George Selkirk laid out on the bench.
Yeah.
So I said, geez, what happened? Yeah. Lefty looked at me. He said, the shock was too much for him.
Oh, they used to repeat that.
They'd pull that on
you.
And that's the first time and only time I ever had it pulled on me. He said, the shock was too much for him.
You had some pretty good talent in the way of pitchers that you observed over the years. And one of the guys, I think one of the most remarkable pitching staffs was the one that you were part of, at least you were on the team, that had Jim Turner, Lou Fett, and Milt Schaffner.
Right, yeah.
Lou Fett, incidentally, if you've seen the ads on television for Fetty Ford,
mm-hmm.
that's a cousin of
Is
Lou
it?
Fett's, yeah. I ran into Mr. Fett in King's Supermarket. The old man, Henry Fett.
Is that right?
And I said, are you by any chance related to Lou Fett? He said, that's my cousin. He said, he died, which I knew.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, yes, he said, we're cousins. He said, we've never been very close because of the distance.
Yeah, he came from Missouri.
But he was one fine pitcher for the Braves.
Yes, he was.
And Turner was, of course.
The fellow here, the Ford man, is a very close friend of my boy, the fellow I worked for.
Oh, is that right?
Because I bought a car there. And surprisingly enough, and I never thought to ask that question.
There's a...
In fact, my daughter's driving it out in California. I had it shipped out to her when I lost my wife because it was brand new.
Well, it's,
she needed one, so.
I was surprised, but he wasn't just kidding. He was serious. Danny McFadden also pitched
briefly. Oh, yeah.
And there's a great story about him. You know, he was not an umpire bear of any kind.
No, no.
Very quiet, but he felt he was getting a hosing one day on calls. And he wore these big glasses, you know.
Right.
So he walked down off the mound, took the glasses off, and I think it was Reardon, maybe it was Jock O'Connell, I don't remember the umpire, but he takes the glasses off and he says, you really need these more than I do. And he got the thumb and the arm and the whole thing. that was a true story.
You know, Clem used to call him Applehead for some reason or other. Bill Clem always called Danny Applehead. Hey, Applehead. Rah!
Then let's see, we got Manny Salvo, Al Javery.
Right, Al Javery. You know, you were talking how Lonnie didn't think that the
Casey
took care of the young fellas.
Yeah.
Up there,
yeah.
Casey would holler at me if I didn't yell to fellas like Javery and Johnson and some of those younger pitchers.
Courage.
Courage, no, not only that, to make sure to cover first base. He says, it's your job. You're old enough, and you should be teaching these young fellas.
That's
something else. He used to blame us if they made a mistake. He didn't blame them.
Now, you weren't with the team then, but you could appreciate the spectacular feat that was accomplished by Jim Tolman when he was pitching for the Braves years later. He had three home runs in one day.
I broke in with Jim. Wheeling. And for 36, he was on the ball club.
But hitting three home runs at Braves Field?
Right. That's something.
That for a pitcher.
Yeah, he was always a good hitter.
Yeah.
You know, he wrote to me after the 36 season, 33, when I was at Wheeling. He came to Oakland, California. And he wrote, and he said, you know, he says, I ran into a funny situation when I got home after the series. We lost to Zanesville. They just had Clay Bryant and Steve Sunder, a couple of guys like that. Down there and that.
Bryant should have been in the Hall of Fame if he'd been with a decent team.
And Jim says to me, he said, my family moved and never told me where they went. He says, it took me a week to find them.
That's unbelievable.
That was a funny family. Because his brother Jackie, if you remember, he was a weirdo. He played in the in the Coast League for a while. And he was a character. But Jim, I understand, Jim and Schnoz, Lombardi, those two, they could get rid of a case of beer any one sitting.
Pat Lombardi was one of the most deadly hitters I've ever seen in baseball.
Now there's a guy, I'd say, can you imagine him hitting balls on his AstroTurf?
No.
We used to play him. Nobody played on the dirt. We were all in the outfield. Even I could get back to first base to make the play before he could get down. If he could run on one step quicker, shoot that.
He was a lot better catcher than people thought.
Oh, he was an excellent receiver.
I was talking to Bill Werber.
Good arm, he'd throw you out if you weren't watching yourself.
Bill Werber said that Lombardi was a very deceptive catcher. He had a great arm.
Yeah.
And he'd throw behind runners at first base and everything else. The one thing that you haven't brought up, and I haven't either, I think is a very important factor today. The baseball gloves that were used by the ballplayers of your era were so different than the gloves being used today. Now, I'm sure a guy like Ozzie Smith, for example, with the Cardinals today, that he would be a great ballplayer in any era.
That could be, yeah.
But the catches that are made in the outfield today.
Yeah, they're nets.
And the catches that are made at first base on ground balls.
That's right. In between hops.
And the half hops.
Yeah.
There's no way some of the guys playing first base today could. I mean, Lou Gehrig, for crying out loud, had something that looked like a pancake.
That was just something you could wear out.
But, you know, that's such a difference.
Camilli was the same way. He had a little small glove.
That to me is a big, big factor. They try to compare third baseman today. Now, I wouldn't take anything away from Brooks Robinson.
Yeah.
But the glove that Brooksy used, if that were in the hands of a pie trainer or a Bob Rolfe or those guys had even more range.
That's right.
And with the gloves that they use today. I've seen catches, you know, when a guy jumps up against the fence and throws his glove
over
the fence
and comes back with the ball.
I don't think that could have happened. I really don't, you know. I want to talk about Whit Wyatt. You had him for a very short period, didn't you? On one of your... No.
He wasn't there with me.
Did you bat against him at any time?
Yeah.
Because he had a remarkable career. Not long in the majors, but
right,
he came up with Chicago and Detroit.
Yeah.
He was a hard thrower, but not a much of a pitcher. But when Larry McPhail bought him from Brooklyn, the guy was... He had to be one of the greatest pitchers Brooklyn or the National League.
Yeah, he was rough.
And he would throw these two or three different speed fastballs, and he had different speed curves.
And that's, to me, is the name of pitching, changing the speed of the ball. I talked to Eddie Lopat about it frequently. It's changing the speed. It's all the difference. Just location and change of speed.
You tell Lopat that I was with one of his favorite cousins. It was a guy, my name is Saul, the guy pitched for Paul Richards, Saul
Roggeveen.
Roggeveen.
I know Saul.
Was pitching at Yankee Stadium against Lopat, and he came up to bat with two outs and the bases loaded as a hitter.
Mm.
And Lopat must have felt, you know, Lopat never gave anybody a fastball down the middle of the plate as long as he was pitching. But he figured this guy, Roggeveen hit it into the left field seats for a grand slam. And Roggeveen was telling this story at a Sabre meeting. And he said, all I was trying to do, he said, was not struck out. I thought that was a very funny story.
Talking about that, Casey believed in that fake bunt. Polo grounds.
Yeah.
Situations of bunt, and he give me the sign, try the fake bunt. And I squared around.
Yeah.
I guess Manuel Salvo was pitching it. And I just went boom, like that, and it jumped into the stands. So I'm running third base, and Casey's there. He said, I told you it was a hell of a play.
Well, I would get back to Wyatt. Wyatt had some remarkable games that he pitched, and of course,
he had some
tough luck, but the games that he pitched against Mort Cooper and Paul Derringer were historic games in the National League. He had one hot day in Cincinnati, and it could get hot out there, where he was going nothing to nothing for nine innings with Derringer. And the beginning of the 10th inning, he gets up and hits a home run over the near where the laundry is there in left field. He comes around the bases. It must have been 100 degrees, maybe more, on the field. And he gets to the dugout, and the trainer, whoever it was at that time, gave him a glass of mouthwash, thinking, you know, that he was going to rinse his mouth. But he drank it and got deathly ill and had to leave the game. The manager, everybody was pissed off at the trainer,
Sure.
And I don't even remember. I think Hugh Casey finished the game for him, but that was an interesting
experience. That's funny.
Roy Henshaw.
Little left-hander. Oh, yeah.
Roy
came over from the Cubs.
Great pitcher at the University of Chicago.
Yep.
Used to pitch both games of a doubleheader for the University of Chicago. Mm-hmm. It was quite a strikeout artist.
Yeah, he could throw the ball pretty well.
Very good ping-pong player.
Yeah, he was a good athlete.
Yeah. Married a Brooklyn girl.
Yeah.
Vito Tamulis.
Vito, left-hander, being Yankee property.
Yeah, Vito was
up through the Yankee.
He pitched a lot of good ball for the Brooklyn club.
Quite well.
And I don't know, there may be, how about guys that, when you were playing with DiMaggio, I guess like everybody else that played with him, you must have been impressed with him.
Very much so. He really wanted to win. I remember one day in Cleveland, you know, he never said much. And we were getting close to cinching the pennant. And I guess Buddy Rosar was catching. And he hit into a double play, and he didn't really get down straight, whether he was tired or worn out or whatever. But he didn't get down to first base very fast. All that Joe said to him, hey, Bud, you don't feel like playing, just tell me, I'll get a hold of Mr. McCarthy, he'll get you out of there. That's all he said.
How about Charlie Keller? He was a fine ball player.
He was one of my real fine people that I thought an awful lot. And I told him the last time I was with him, Lord rest his soul, I said, you should have been should be in the Hall of Fame. You should have been in if they'd have left you alone and let you hit the way you were hitting in Newark and not change you to just hit home runs. You'd have hit 400. I think you would have, too.
I believe that.
He could hit that ball in left center as far as anybody I ever saw.
He also had chronic back problems, too.
Yeah.
That him aside from anything else.
Well, he was almost killed there before he died, 7 years. A horse got to him
on
the farm,
right.
And lucky the son found him. And
he had a fellow Irishman playing also, Jerry Pretty,
second
baseman.
Yep.
Phil Rizzuto was the shortstop. Phil Rizzuto tells a great story about Casey Stengel, you know, when you talk about he went to a tryout camp at Ebbets Field.
Yeah, that's right, well.
And Stengel told him to get a shoeshine box. And it must have been quite interesting when Stengel took over managing the Yankees and found Rizzuto, and knew Rizzuto was going to be a shortstop.
Well, talking about that, going back to Brooklyn and Eddie Lopat, at the Yankees cinched the pennant here in stadium in 49, and I had been managing Newark, so we finished up our season, so I was at the ball game. And we went up we were all invited up to the restaurant after the game, and Casey introduced me to Eddie. I hadn't met him. And Eddie said, well, he said, Case, let me tell you a story. He said, I was working out with Brooklyn, and he said, Bud was playing. I had forgotten this incident. And he said, Mungo claimed I stole his wallet while I was in the clubhouse. And he said, Bud took me over and sat down in his place. He said, hey, he didn't steal your wallet. It's floating around here somewhere. You'll find it. And sure enough, they found the wallet. He said, I never forgot it. So he says, I remember Bud, which was very nice. But it's Eddie was telling Casey the story. I thought it was
I'll tell you some interesting things, things that come to my mind. You had a pitcher on the Brooklyn team who had one of the great curveballs, and the fellow by the name of George Jeffcoat.
George Jeffcoat.
If he could have pitched with a decent team, I think he'd have been a big man.
He became a minister, you know.
I didn't know
that. Last time I saw him was on TV, many years ago.
Is that